What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Batman in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every theatrically released Batman movie. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Never.
He's barely fitting in his frame, Andy Cortez.
Never.
The producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Never.
And the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
Just do it. It's not. You just say never. It's all you gotta do. You just have to say never.
I was gonna start making myself laugh.
Kevin, I'll adjust myself. I'll adjust myself in the frame.
I was adjusting. Then I thought to myself, like, "What's the? I'm gonna try really hard for this."
Damn him.
You're gonna try really hard to say never.
Well, I was gonna try to do it.
Greg, how do you feel about Kevin? How do you feel about Kevin today?
Kevin's bringing the energy and cherub-like laughter we need now more than ever in 2020, Tim.
That's true. Laughter that you can only get live here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames or later on youtube.com/kindoffunnyroosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to it, guess what? We're there for you on podcast services. Just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Reviews. And if you want to get the show ad-free, if you want to write in your haikus, your reviews, all that stuff, patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, James Davis at James Davis Makes and Andrew Feisner did. Thank you both very, very much for
thank
making
you, James
this
and
show.
Andrew. Thank you.
There we go. You guys are doing great. Today, we are talking about Batman Begins. Now, there's a lot of movies we've talked about on this show, right? But there's every once in a while, I look at a date and I'm like, that can't be right. Released June 15, 2005, which was 15 years ago.
Crazy.
How does that make you guys feel?
It fucking sucks, dude.
It's actually, so I started watching this last night with, and Dee was there, and she was like, this movie, she asked the same question. She's like, when was this made? I'm like, I don't know, because this movie has a timeless feel to it. It's so well made that it could have literally come out last year, and I would have been like, oh yeah, that's definitely a modern movie. This watching this and watching all these back-to-back, this movie was such a monumental leap forward for the Batman franchise, or just for comic book movies in general, that it's hard to believe that more like iterations didn't come before it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's hard to believe we didn't get like a bat, and this is no disrespect to like Batman v Superman, but a more like evolved like, evolution of them beforehand, right? He just kind of skipped the line 100% with this movie and did what I think we saw. We actually read some trivia, I think, where Keaton was like, hey, I wanted to go more into what Batman was feeling and like his psychological aspects of it and like have more character development there. But they were never able to achieve that with really the first five movies that came before this. But man, he just knocked this out of the park.
It's interesting you bring up that this being such a big shift for at a moment for superhero movies, because it's crazy to think this is 3 years before Iron Man. Right.
Jeez.
Yeah. And on top of that, like, it's not just superhero movies. Like, this changed movies, right? Like, looking at what it did for James Bond. Like, Casino Royale, I don't think would have been what it was if it weren't for the tone and the kind of shift that this movie had, right?
Well,
the darkness, the grittiness, like, all that stuff. Like,
I think what this does and what we all need to pay, like, tribute to is that this told everyone, hey, you can make a real movie with this subject matter. You don't have to make – this isn't, like, some weird, like, comic booky kids thing. You can tell a really, really good story, and it can still have a guy dressed up as a bat and still be called Batman and it actually be a legitimately good movie. And I think that was, like – for me, that was – I mean, I'd always known that. I think we've always known that. But I think convincing the masses that, hey, there's a mass marketability, obviously, in comic book movies. But more than that, you can do what all great movies do, what all Pixar movies do, for instance, is that you can make it for kids. But also when people who are mature walk in, they really come away with something. This movie is about a father and son. This movie is about, like, revenge versus justice. There's some
it's
really
about your fears.
It's also about fear.
Do you get
they
it?
Say
it's about
fear,
fear
no less than 17 times.
Well, I get that, but I think when they were writing this movie, they were like, what are we gonna take on in this? What is Bruce Wayne's sort of like character arc? What is his journey in this? And it really is, yes, of course, it's overcoming the fear, but it's also overcoming the fear without and fight and elevating that, right? You have those two different sides of like how do you dole out justice? Is it with a gun or is it like a different way? And there's that one moment that I never really never really picked on before, when he's looking at the gun that he was about to kill the guy with, and he just throws it into the river. And that is the moment where he's like, Batman doesn't kill. Batman needs to be better. We need to be better than these criminals. And that's mirrored then in that line he has with I guess Ducard, but with the real Ra's al Ghul, where he's like, you have to kill this guy and prove that you can dole out justice. Like, that's not justice. Like, we need to be better than them. We don't need to sink to their level. And to me, that is like the defining thing of Batman that he absolutely nailed in this movie.
Man, Nick just blowing his load this early.
Go, Nick, go. Yeah. Start
I'm
swinging.
Out there, man. Like, I stand by the fact that, like, listen, I love the Nolan trilogy. And we're going to talk about Dark Knight. And I'm sure, like, all kidding aside, I'm sure that'll be number one because it is a phenomenally made movie. But I think that this movie is the best Batman movie. Like, all the things he does in this, he actually uses theatricality and deception. He actually uses the shadows. He comes from the, like, a lot of the choreography in this is so well done, and it just, they kind of drop the ball on that as we go in lieu of better story, like, you know, a more complex story. But man, there's moments in this where I'm like, oh, I forgot he was like hanging upside down to scare the shit out of the guy. Or there's that one
not corny.
And it's not corny. There's the moment where the guy walks toward the dark cargo container, and the guy and his friend's like, "What happened?" He's like, "I don't know." And he turns around, and he just gets fucking pulled into it, like, super violently. All that stuff is so unbelievably cool because that's what Batman would have to do to take on these people. He doesn't necessarily do that in the later films, and it's a little disappointing.
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what you're talking about and why this movie excels the way it does, especially at being not only a great movie, right, but overcoming being a comic book movie and doing all this different stuff. It is that idea where, you know, we all took it for granted as kids watching, not in this interview show where we pick everything apart, but watching, you know, the Keaton movies or whatever, and just like, how does he have this suit and what's going on with the cave and yada yada yada, and like, right, the fact that they go through and actually, with sometimes spelling it out, sometimes like you're talking about, of him looking at the gun, having that, the thought we can all hear, right, of like no killing and throwing it away, and like, right, especially how much the gun looks like Joe Chill's gun, right? They're both revolvers, they both have the spinning chamber. It's the idea that, you know, like, yeah, so how would he build this? How would he build the cowl and people not know it's him, right? In this thing where Alfred's like, well, we'll order them in 10,000 a piece and bring them in and assemble them here and through dummy corporations. And like, they start explaining to even Lucius Fox, right? Which is a very convenient fix, but a good fix, right? Of him being like, nobody cares about any of this shit. I'm the only one who knows anything about it. And I don't care what you do. I think you own it all. So it's like, great. And to go into the cave and see the cave be nothing and have him start setting up lights, and you start to really see him assemble what it would be to be Batman.
That's really what makes it spectacular to me. Like, this movie like brings it to a whole other level, because we sit here and we shit on things like Solo for answering questions that we weren't asking, right? But I think that we just watched 5 Batman movies, and every single time that these elements are introduced, just I'm asking questions. And it's even in the campy tone, even in these different things, it just feels like the world never feels believable for what it is fully. Because sometimes it's serious, but sometimes it's not. This one commits to the vision so hard, and it answers every question that you would have along the way as it goes, with figuring out him becoming Batman with the suit, with the cave, with all the Batmobile, like all of that stuff. Like, I love that. I love how it builds out Gordon and builds out Lucius Fox, and it builds out his supporting cast so well. Where all of them, like, at some point at the end of this movie, it does the thing that we all love so much. The team has to come together. Yeah. We're getting the different planes of action where all of them are working together, even if it's not like a specific, okay, you do this, you do this.
Yeah.
But we needed Gordon to shoot down the thing to make the train go. It's like, I loved all of that stuff. The one nitpick I have about this movie is that the whole last third of it, I feel like we didn't need the scope and scale to get to the point of like, Gotham is gonna fucking die, right? But they still pulled it off really well. It's just, for what this movie is from the entire way through, I feel like it ratchets it up really, really high to like this crazy city destroying threat, like, not out of nowhere, because it definitely is built up. I just think that it's so incredibly ballsy for Nolan to be like, we're going to introduce Batman on this small level. He's going to be a fucking ninja. It's going to be so small and dark and shadows. And then he's going to have to like stop this giant water thing from exploding.
But see, I love that. I love it because this movie, everyone always says the Nolan movies are grounded in reality. I think they're grounded in reality just enough. I think the Dark Knight is a little bit too grounded. This one, I think, strikes that perfect balance behind this shit's believable, except for the Tumblr, which anyone with the fucking right mind would be like, that's clear. Someone could figure out where that thing came from. Clearly, there's a government official that's like, hey, that's the Wayne thing we almost bought, right? Doesn't matter. But I think he does. This movie strikes that perfect balance of like Scarecrow is that comic book enemy, right? Falcone is that comic booky enemy, but a lot of the other elements, like you're talking about, Tim, where we see him, you know, shaving the, like making his own little batarangs and stuff like that. That is like, oh, this is cool. It's fun to see how that would actually, you know, how many, Greg, when you were a kid, didn't you ever wonder like, how would you make your own Batman costume if you had Batman and all that stuff?
So to see him do that, and even, I think even like it's not done, and this is not a future spoiler, but a little bit, and even the car, the Tumbler, right? Like they make such a big deal in this one of the Tumbler being this black mass that's shooting through the night, right? It's not like there is like a great shot of it, right? Like there's the damn good television, kind of
like a stealth bomber, so like maybe totally can't even get,
so like, yeah, you get a little bit away from it. But even next movie they do address that, right? When he's like, you're telling me you didn't notice your baby pancake caking cop cars on the highway? Like, yeah, like they do address to an extent, but I mean, I'm with you all, yeah. Of this is, you know, suspend your disbelief as much as possible. Like, yeah, that is the thing of it, and seeing him assemble it all in the spelunking suit and the different belt and like cutting the harness, the stuff off.
And shout out to Morgan Freeman,
kills it.
Because every scene that Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine are in, they all have such good chemistry against, like, to play that mentor level in a different way with Christian Bale's character. It's so, where he's like, listen, man, the less I know, the more I don't have to lie to people. That's such a great scene. Oh, you would be interested in that.
Andy Cortez, you're being suspiciously quiet. What are your thoughts? Watch.
This movie fucking rules, man. Like, I think there's a lot of parts in Nolan movies. This is getting really nitpicky, but I think there's a lot of parts in Nolan movies that we write off as too convenient because the overall movie is still so good. The overall vibe and tone and acting and writing, everything else seems really, really good. And there are at least four or five moments here in this movie that do wow, we wrap that up really, really fast. Oh, yeah. Shit. Like the father, the parent stuff happens really fast, and it's all kind of thrown at us really quickly. But we as comic book fans or as Batman fans know the background, so we don't really need that much. But still, it's kind of not great filmmaking to kind of brush over that shit that fast. When he goes to visit Falcone, he just like walks in and they let him in there. And it's a very, sort of convenient Inception style stuff where suddenly he's talking to Falcone and it's no big deal. And it's like as if they've known each other forever. It's kind of like that stuff. It kind of bothers me a little bit, but everything else is still so good. And the just building up the world. I remember not loving this movie a lot. Because I think I remember this movie more around the time of The Dark Knight coming out, because it was like, oh, I got to rewatch that other Batman movie that Nolan made. And I never loved it. I never loved the whole, dude, like building up and becoming a ninja and Ra's al Ghul and all that stuff just seemed really out of place to me, because that's not really the Batman that interests me. But this time around, like, fuck, it's all so incredibly well written and beautifully developed, and just all everything with Ra's al Ghul and becoming a ninja and learning all those skills and then going back to Gotham to have that court case. Like, it's so awesome, dude. This world is developed really realistically. And I do have a couple of questions for y'all. Did we know leading into it that Cillian Murphy is Scarecrow?
I believe we did.
Yeah,
I think we did. I think when they released all the press and stuff, he was billed as Scarecrow.
Yeah, okay, got it.
That, like, I
yeah.
feel like that it was the big surprise, like that Ra's al Ghul was in it, right? I never.
Well,
saw
we didn't know. I think we knew the League of Shadows was a thing. We didn't know that Liam Neeson was Ra's al Ghul. That was the big twist.
Yeah,
with that, which was awesome, by the way. I think all those small elements are so beautifully set up in this. And everything is sort of like if you see how they structure the story. Everything is set up very, very well and has a payoff for it. The blue thing comes full circle, right? The blue flower comes full circle. Yep. That's the gas that he has to use to face his fears. And then inevitably, that's the thing that's the MacGuffin to the whole thing. It's awesome. But like, the only thing that there are some small details, like to Andy's point, that do stick out to me, that every time I watch this, I'm like, God, I wish they introduced that better. Namely, the Wayne device just randomly pops in an hour and nine minutes into this. And you're like, oh, that's a kind of big fucking deal. Like, that should have been set up a little bit more. Yeah, there's just that one exposition scene where the guy's like, oh, We've got a problem.
Rutger Hauer's just reading the newspaper and drinking a bourbon, and the guy walks in. He's like, "We've lost this thing on this ship," and you're like, oh, "Okay."
Wanted to point this out about that one guy. That dude was trying to get like best Oscar for, or like best actor Oscar. That scene was the most acted. Like, sir, like, we're in danger. Like, he was just so overacting there.
And Rutger Hauer was underacting. Rutger Hauer was like, oh, Jesus, this happens all the time.
I'm with you, Andy, of like when this movie first came out, I didn't love it. And I feel like critics really, really, really loved this movie. But I feel like just normal movie going fans, and especially being a fucking like high school kid at the time, it's just like I was not refined to cinema. You know, it was like, this isn't the Batman I want. Like, this is kind of weird. Why is he not Batman for half this movie? Like, all this, these fucking stupid complaints. The more I watch this movie, the more you rewatch this movie, I just feel like Batman Begins gets better and better and better, because it's just so rad and it's so well done, where all these elements just work together to make this beautiful symphony of a movie that should not exist. There should not be a Batman movie that is this good. And then somehow Dark Knight happens. Like, and Dark Knight could only happen because this movie was so good at how it was set up and made the world, gave the origin story so we can move on. I mean, let alone the end of the Joker reveal. It's like the fact that they didn't go with the Joker, the fact that they went with Scarecrow, and that Scarecrow is kind of just a bad guy in this. He's not the bad guy. And I love the way he's defeated and literally just gets sent off because he's fucking useless.
I will say this movie for me has like the most hype moments in the entire Nolan trilogy. And I always come back to that. There is one moment in this movie that is, I think, the best moment in all three of them. And it's the moment where the old commissioner is like, Gordon's on the phone and he's like, you got to send more reinforcements. And he goes, Gordon, there's no one left. And right in the middle of his sentence, the fucking tumbler just skyrockets over the channel. It's so, that one moment, I'm like, that's fucking Batman right there. That is what Batman does. When all hope is lost, Batman is here for you. And like, they never caught those moments in the prior films.
I still have so many like facts and stuff to get through for the beginning stuff, but I just want to jump right into the Batmobile talk because we're here. We're talking about that moment. Wow. So hit the music.
Andy, hit the song.
Which Batmobile is the best?
Vroom, vroom. What's up? Welcome to Best Batmobile, a podcast within a podcast within a podcast. Right now, our rankings of the best Batmobile stand at this. Number one, the 89 Batmobile. Number two, the Phantasm Batmobile. Number three, Batman Returns. We didn't like the luge. Number four, Batman and Robin. Number five, 1966 Batmobile. And number six, Batman Forever. As Kevin Coelho said, I hate it. Where do we want to rank the tumbler?
I think this one's complicated because I do think that in terms of visuals, obviously our rankings are pretty apt, and like it's hard to like put this one in there at like ranking high because it doesn't look iconically like a Batmobile.
Real dumb, real dumb looking.
But the chase scene where this thing's really introduced, and it's they're going, the cops are after them, lights turn off, and the Batmobile is acting like a bat. It is acting like a ninja. It is acting like Batman.
All right, sure. But it's like stealth mode engaged. He just turned off his headlights. It was like, all right.
But I mean, when you're painted that way and you can like move and be as quiet as it is, that scene is so.
The scene's great. It's just that thing is, I just like that he's like, oh man, he was right there. Well, no, he's still right there. Like, you can, guys, whatever.
Just,
yeah, sure.
He just hit the brakes. Turned off his headlights. I never understood why he did that until this last viewing. It was to get rid of the helicopter. But the helicopter gave up real quick. They're like, well, Nick, we can't see him anymore. We're gone.
He fucking exploded. Exactly. Turn around.
I'm going to say the helicopter pilot and the person, the manning the spotlight, like, fire him, dude. Like,
dude, they're fired.
How are you going to lose that thing?
Here's the thing. I love the tumbler. I love the tumbler. I think it's at least number two, number three. But the functionality is great. There's one thing about the tumbler that I think was the worst choice they could have possibly made, because it absolutely kills the action every time we go back to it. And it's the stupid fucking targeting computer. What? That is not practical at all. I don't know why they did that. I'm sorry. We're in the middle of a fight. I have to shoot this fucking brick wall. I'm driving at 120 miles an hour. Let me take 20 seconds out of my driving time to just go into this little thing, and this is not practical at all. It's the stupidest. I wish there was like another controller that came up that he would have like been able to joystick, or at least just have the controls on the fucking steering wheel like it should have been, like Spy Hunter. Totally. I just absolutely hate that they made that choice, and I don't understand why. If I were a production designer, I'd be like, or you could not have him have to wait 30 seconds on top of this rooftop. You could just have him be there, blow the thing up, and then just go. I don't know.
Yeah. My favorite thing, I hate it. I've always hated it. It's always been one of my big sticking points with this Batmobile, but I still find it hysterical, and everybody's welcome to go back and watch this now. When Gordon gets put into it, it so looks like he's going down on somebody, and unexpectedly going down on somebody, because he's like, whoa, and he's like straight fucking right on top of it.
He gives Gordon the key fob, yeah. And Gordon has never seen one of these before. He's like 2 feet away from me. He's like, this mechanism work? I'm like, dude, it's a fucking alarm system for a car. Just hit the fucking button and it'll open up.
Gordon had perfect reason because he didn't. Gordon didn't know if he was getting crushed in that goddamn machine. I would have thought, like, oh my god, like it's over right here. It was a trap to kill me.
I think that was one of those things that was an interesting concept that made it somehow to the final. You know what's sad is I wish that had been a reveal in the next film when the bat cycle comes out. That would have been fucking cool.
Yeah, if it's totally.
And pulled it back in. You're like, what the hell's happening? But when that happens, you're like, oh, I already know what's going to happen because I've seen the thing in the preview and I've seen him get sucked into the fucking hood of this car. It is pretty bad. I put it number two.
Here's my thing, though, with ranking this. It gets complicated because I feel like, yes, there's a lot of criticisms to be had, and you're absolutely right. The targeting thing's stupid. But the way that it jumps over ravines, the way that it jumps on the rooftops when they're doing the chase scene and they're like, what streets is he on? It's like, he's not on the streets. That is so awesome. Freaking that's cool. Good, yeah. And like, yeah. When you think about what the Batmobile did in this movie compared to any other thing, any other Batmobile has done, we're literally just talking about how the other ones look. Like, yeah. With rare exception of like the luge being a stupid thing, the Batmobile's never done anything cool until this
luge
movie.
The luge didn't make it, made the huge jump off the giant statue's arm onto the like other building. Remember, the bike couldn't do that jump.
Tim, one of them rode up a wall,
mm-hmm.
And then stopped.
That's my point.
It's still there to this
and
day.
It hung you can see to this it. Day.
And one of these days, it's gonna fall.
It's like when you throw shoes over a telephone pole.
I always assume this has all been based of like aesthetics. Just
for the most part, it is because the other Batmobiles didn't really do that much stuff. Him's nailing it, right? In this, it's form over function, or excuse me, function over form. In that, this thing is something that you actually could get into and have a fucking battle with police officers in or criminals in and probably get the better out of them. I think I love the look of it. I think it looks like a stealth bomber on wheels. And it's a freaking take. There's a moment where he just, for no reason, is like, I think I want to be on the other side of the road. And he just turns the wheel and plows through one of those center lane dividers. And the cops are like, what? They just, you could tell the lead cop's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not doing this anymore. He just kind of slowly stops.
I love it because obviously the only thing sort of Batman looking about him is obviously the suit is Batman, right? Because everything else sort of has to be, somewhat realistic looking. And I think all the reasoning going behind the Batman being this military vehicle that Fox has been kind of working on and didn't really get to fully utilize or whatever. I think that you got to be wondering for, you know, if you're Christopher Nolan making this movie, man, we can't make it look like the other Batmobiles because that just won't fit in this world, obviously. And I think the idea that it looks the way it does and feels militaristic and feels kind of like this tank, like exactly like they describe it as a tank, I think it's awesome. And I think it's like the perfect thing they could have done, because if they went a little bit more Batman into it, I wouldn't have believed it. And if it would have been just like a Humvee, that would have sucked ass. But this is so unique.
Like, so true.
This is so unique looking, and I think it's perfect. I think it's the perfect thing they could have perfect decision they could have made.
I mean, I think it works really well, and it's one of those things where, like, man, it fits the story so well. Where it's like,
yeah,
I agree. Without a doubt, like, yeah, this is something that like a prototype thing that they were trying to sell to the military. That's exactly what it looks like. That being said, I still think it looks ugly and dumb.
Does it come in black? Yeah.
I just
the functionality of it, the idea of like the throttle is like a jet fighter, it's on the actual center console instead of being like a pedal, was just kind of weird to me. And then the idea of like, he was like, well, it can do rampless jumps. I was like, I don't think it can do that. That's not physically possible. You need a ramp of some sort. But
the jet engine.
Yeah, the jet engine would just literally shoot it right into the water. You need some sort of arcing mechanism that will allow you to take off, unless it's got a wing of some sort. I mean, having said all that, I'll put this firmly at number two. Do we rank it yet?
What's the number one? What's number one?
Number one is the 89 Batmobile. Number two is the Phantasm Batmobile.
Okay, I'll put it number three.
I vote number two. I think it was better than the Phantasm Batmobile, which we like a lot, but remember, wasn't actually a big part of the Phantasm. It's in like two scenes for a total of 15 seconds.
But it's still really cool.
You're right.
Yeah,
great. Yeah, it looks cool. Great. We just went through all the things that this thing does and is amazing for.
That didn't sway me.
According to Gordon, will allow you to blow it.
That all of us agree that like this one's awesome and it's so cool for all the things you can do and it's so high because of that. But it's still not as cool as the 89 one looks, and that matters more than anything.
The 89 one is pimp, dog.
So pimp. It's so fucking pimp. Directed by Christopher Nolan, music by Hans Zimmer and James Newton Howard, a budget of $150 million, a box office of $373.6 million, runtime of 2 hours and 20 minutes. Awards. Batman Begins was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Cinematography and has often been cited as one of the most influential films of the 2000s. Greg, earlier, you teased on Twitter. And if now's not the best time to bring it up, you can.
Now's not the best time.
Okay, that's cool. That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with that.
No, it's not the time. It'll be the time. You'll know the time.
I'll know the time. We'll all know the time when it all happens. But instead of that, then, I want to rank something else. Let's talk about the bat suit.
Ooh.
I'm so conflicted on this bat suit. I think they got so much of it right and so much of it wrong. I think I hate his cowl in this. I think the neck's too fat, and I hate the velour cape. I hate it. I think it, like, to me, I'm like, why would you not go with just a rubber or something like slightly more subdued? Because it looks like he's wearing a giant robe the entire time.
I never noticed it was velour till right now when you said that. Wow.
Andy hit the song.
Which suit is the best? I make up a different song every
time. You're nailing it.
We're aware of that, Andy. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the best bat suit. This is a podcast within a podcast within a podcast. Right now, number one, the best bat suit is Mask of the Phantasm, followed by number two, Batman Returns, followed by number three, Batman Forever Normal, followed by number four, 89 Batman, number five, Batman and Robin Batman, number six, Sonar Suit from Batman Forever, number seven, the 66 Batman, and then number eight, Batman and Robin, the ice suit. We fucking hate it. I'm with you, Nick, of like, it's such a weird mashup, this suit, that I do hate the velour cape. I hate that, like, the cowl is that weird solid piece when he pulls it off to look over Rachel.
I don't like
I hate how chubby his cheeks look in it. His face is all fucking chubby. He's a chubby old Batman, Batman.
Greg, we talked about on the podcast that it's the mouth hole that's so small
throws you off. Right?
Because the other one, the mouth hole is very wide. The mouth holes come out to, like, the cheeks and stuff. With Christopher Nolan, it's a little mouth hole, and I don't love it. But I will say that I think the implementation of the utility belt is so cool. Like, the color of it, the way it clicks, all of the gadgets. I want this Bruce Wayne to make ASMR, because I would all the little clicks and like it sounds like all these little pieces sound incredible to like play with and shit.
I agree with you 90%. But there's a couple things in this where they pushed it too far into reality. One of which was like when he uses the grappling hook, he for whatever reason has to thread it through his belt loop to get it to actually spool him up. Like the mechanism is in his belt for some reason. And it's super weird. I'm like, why wouldn't you just have it be the grappling hooks? They do a couple cutaways in this where I'm like, we didn't need that. We didn't need to see the absolute functionality of it. Cause in reality, once you start going that far in, your brain starts wondering like, there's no fucking way. There's no mechanism that would actually allow him to grapple himself up there that quickly with a tiny little motor that's this big. It's not gonna happen.
That's what you're talking about, right? Of I think the fine line they walk between being the most real Batman and explaining enough but not explaining too much. I'm right there with you. Yeah, that when like he shoots it up and then it's like this like fishing wire that he winds into this thing. It's like all right, like, I got
you
it.
You don't need that. We don't need that. And there's and this again, this is nitpicky, but some of these it's little things like that I wish that I think the editor could have probably taken out. That I think would have worked really well. And there's a couple instances as well when he's fighting in the suit that he most of the time I think he looks really good because we're doing really quick cuts of him kind of jumping in and grabbing people. But every single time we see him jump down in between a group of, by the way, how many fucking people were in that warehouse at the beginning? Because I could have swore it was only three. And then it cuts to the end. He jumps in the middle of 15 fucking guys. I'm like, where were you guys? Your buddies were getting demolished 20 feet away. But every single time they show him fighting in the suit, it just doesn't work for me. Because a lot of the times you have to, they had to shoot it so close up because he can't move in the thing. And there's even one moment where like it's the end of the fight scene, but you still clearly can see three other dudes' feet like still standing ready to attack. And then the editor's just like, I give up. Let's just get the fuck out of the scene and go to the part where he puts Falcone on the, what I would assume, really, really, really hot spotlight that would be burning the back of his neck.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be burned alive.
I guess the color of the belt is what I appreciate the most about
it. It's cool.
That it sort of harkens back to the 89, or I think it was 89?
Yeah, 89.
With the yellow belt. But the fact that it's sort of like this subdued kind of brass looking thing. And it just, I rank this really, really high just for the sort of modern take on it with the cool. Like, this must have been a 3D artist's dream to build this suit and kind of, like, make the segmented abs and all the, little tiny sort of tech look to it, the tech vibe to it. It's awesome. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I love it. I think it begs the question, why leave that one part of your suit super shiny gold? But I guess it's not that super shiny, but, like, why? So, like, we see him spray painting everything else black. Do you think he got to the belt and was like... Gotta have a gold belt.
Too many intricate parts.
Gucci.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's true, actually, Kevin, because the belt is functional, right? It has that little rail that goes like, and I love that.
It's really cool.
An homage to the 89 Batman where he does that one moment in 89, Greg, where he touches the belt and his gun comes around. Like,
shoots around. Yeah.
And we have that moment here, too, where he's sliding things on his belt back and forth, which I just think is really, really cool.
I think
that this one is the easiest one to like really pick apart because it's so realistic and like functional. So it's like a lot of elements of this movie are kind of just like we start to see the flaws more because we're like looking at this thing and like questioning if it can really exist and all that. Whereas that it's cool. I like that this is a real take on what a Batman suit would look like. But it's not as cool. It's kind of like the Batmobile situation where like it doesn't look as cool as the other one. So it's I would probably put it number two.
The animated.
Right now it's Phantasm, then it's Batman Returns, then it's Batman Forever Normal, then it's 89 Batman, then it's Batman. So we're getting into
the weeds. Somebody needs it more.
Number one, the Christian Bale.
His boots are way too small. He's got little tiny booties on. I can't get behind that. Second off, he looks like he's wearing dish gloves. And he's got so much slack in his crotch that I just wonder, like, why couldn't we tighten that crotch up just a little bit? I'm looking at it right now. And then I cannot rank this in the top five just because he looks like he bought a Spirit Halloween like.
Let's not disparage the good name. Let's not disparage the good name of Spirit Halloween right now.
Spirit Halloween vampire towel,
and then cut out like and just threw it on himself. You know what I mean? It looks like that cheap cape we bought Blessing when he was king at our prom. Just throw it on him. Make it stinky.
I think he bought that himself.
Off of him.
I love how you say that when we're looking at this picture. We're like, legitimately, look at the washing gloves on 89 Batman, or honestly, any of these Batman.
Yeah, I still think the 89 Batman suit is fucking cool as shit because I think everything goes well together. Like Bale's Batman, you can't see his cape in this.
Nick, on, I don't know. The 89
picture,
Batman
picture of 89 Batman, I think, looks amazing. But I agree, like in function, when you see him moving around, the cowl does look way too thick. Especially the thing that put me off from that is really paying attention to 89 when he's running around. It's like, who put the 12-year-old in the costume? Because he just looks like a big old head.
It's also how he moves in it, where he can't move the whole top section of his body. It looks like a little kid, you know?
And to be fair, I mean, we'll get to this one when we get to the who's the best Bruce Wayne or best Batman. But Bale just is a more physically better suited imposing person to be in the bat suit. Like when he does the push-up scene.
Dude, Andy, hit the abs song.
Were they born in labs? It's time to rank those abs.
What's up, everybody? We'll get back to the bat suit ranking in just a second.
I'm sorry, are they called podcasts within a podcast within a podcast for a reason, guys?
I'll be honest with you, dude. Fucking shout out to Christian Bale. Because you guys remember right before this, I think he did that movie, The Mechanic, or The Machinist, excuse me. Where he like ate an apple a day or some shit and dropped down to a point where they were like, we got to take you to the dentist hospital because you're going to die. And then I think in like 3 months, he put on like 50 or 20 pounds of muscle. He looked fucking great.
Tim, number hold one. Hold on. Tim, it keeps the doctor away, not the dentist.
An apple a day actually probably would make you go to the dentist. They're very sugary.
They're sugary. You got to use your chompers to get through them.
He looks great in this movie. Shout out to Christian Bale. Because this is one thing I love about Christian Bale as well. He's a real actor. like to the point where if you don't think he's a real actor, go watch Vice. Go watch him disappear as Dick Cheney into that role and then come back and watch this.
I mean, he's a bit of a psychopath. Like, he's very much unhinged, right?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that makes for great screen time. Sure. He
disappeared. I heard he when he did The Prestige, he learned how to do real magic.
It's true. He cut off his finger, too.
I can see that.
But I think, yeah, I mean, he committed to this role. And it's so nice to have every single person in this in these movies, A, committed, B, just great actors across the board, minus a couple of roles that I'm sure we'll talk about later. And just see, like, just come. I mean, fuck, dude, he got jacked. And Tim, what are my two ultimate goals in life?
One,
to be on the cover of Time with the cool ring lights in my eye. Mm-hmm. Right?
Wearing the Speedo from Casino Royale.
Okay, we'll throw that in there. And then two, getting paid to get jacked. Something, mm-hmm. And he got to do both. That's cool.
That is cool. Good for him. Rank those apps.
There it is. Number one with a bullet.
All right, so now to rank his suit. Where is everybody voting for the suit?
God damn it, I just got this real quick,
I want to talk about the, because we're talking a lot of shit about the cape. And for good reason, the velour, weird, whatever. But again, the implementation in this movie, dope as shit. Seeing the actual like electromagnetic shit and like seeing how that all works and there's an actual functionality to it and it's cool. I don't know, man. It gets some points for me for that.
Yeah, it looks bad though, Tim. It looks really bad.
It looks unfinished. It looks like they couldn't decide what material to use. So they just went with number one. And it sucks because the rest of the suit is, I know why they did it. They were like, we need him to pop because he's not popping. The rest of the suit's just, it's like the wrong color, gray, black. I mean, shout out to the bats.
It's very rubbery. Shit. Matte rubbery.
It's very rubbery. And I think they wanted to bring a texture into it that was a little bit more, like, I don't know, I guess warm. Or maybe it was the lighting thing. Maybe Wally Pfister wanted something to actually, like, reflect light differently. But it just doesn't go. Like, this is the one thing I love about the 89 suit is that the fucking, his cape is that thick, just like, it could eat a bullet rubber. That I think works so well. Again, not so much when he's running around and it just kind of goes out and he's got the big old head. But I stand by the fact that his suit looks like the 89 Bat suit looks like it could take a bullet. Bale's suit can apparently take everything but a straight shot. And man, I can't tell you how long I looked that fucking word up. That is not a term. I don't know who made that word up.
But you understood anything, but I mean, like straight on. But if it just like a glancing blow,
isn't every bullet straight on?
I think it means like what's gonna happen? Like straight on, like literally
gut buster. You know, on. like the gun that gets
the word
your pocket.
That is point. The word they're looking point for blank. Is point blank. That's what they were looking for.
But remember, Alfred's always, like Australian or New Zealander or something. You know?
No, that was
speaking of Alfred.
Fox said that.
Hit. Well, so is Morgan Freeman. Hit the song.
That's not Andy. True.
No, he's American.
Alfred. Alfred is the best. Which one is the best?
I'm Alfred. Welcome to Ragu Alfalf, where we rank all the Alfreds in the Batman Cinematic Universe and the In Review Universe.
let's not pretend on
fun,
one.
Andy. Let's you don't even do anything on this show except look morose the whole time, Andy. Number one right now, the best Alfred is from Phantasm. Number two, it's Batman Forever's Alfred. Number three, it's 89 Alfred. Number four, it's Batman Returns Alfred. Number five is 66 Alfred. Number six is Batman and Robin Alfred. Where number do we want one. To put Michael Caine?
Hands Michael down, number Caine. One. Never. Without thinking 100%. About it more.
Come on,
it's so sad. Like, how sad is it that he is number one and so far ahead of the rest of the pack? Where it's just like,
well, I mean, I feel like
other Alfreds.
Like, even if we had other real actors in there, Michael Caine's so damn good.
You guys got to understand, on, dude, though. You guys got to understand, though. Yes, Michael Caine. I'm a very good actor. Right, he's a very good actor, everybody. But,
We're losing it.
But fucking homeboy in the other movies, he Michael made Goh. The suits.
He did, and he made them by
dialing. How? But how did he make them?
We didn't. Greg, hey,
simpler times. You didn't ask.
It. Yeah, okay. It's one of those like show don't tell. They told but not didn't.
There
show,
is
you know?
So there's, much. Well, sorry, I'll switch.
There's the great moment in this when he sees him again, and he's like back from the dead, right? And that whole scene on the plane where he's like, I just couldn't figure. You know, like what bringing you back from the dead, and then Christian Bale goes, well, luckily you own everything. And Michael Caine has that perfect delivery where he leans back in his chair and he's like, you can borrow the rolls if you want. You
bring know? It back it's with a full just, tank of gas.
Yeah, bring it back with a full tank of gas, and like pretends like he's about to go to sleep on his plane. It's so he's so good in this, and he's so good in it because they wrote a real fucking character. They wrote a real like all of these characters feel three-dimensional. And this again, no disrespect to Tim Burton Batman. full disrespect to the Schumacher Batmans.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'll take it. But those movies were about spectacle. Like the 89 Batman was spectacle. Batman Returns was spectacle. They tried to get a little bit darker and deeper, but it just didn't work. This is the first real movie that they wrote that just happened to be about Batman. And I think that's where a lot of the character jumping off points were. And like I think it's always a sign of a good movie where if you took out the idea of Batman, would you still want to watch this movie? If this was just a movie about a rich guy who lost his parents, who lost his way, and then this butler was the one that helped bring him back to like reality and realize that he had more to offer the world than just being a fucking asshole, would you still want to watch that movie if it was Michael Caine and Christian Bale? And I say yes, I absolutely would. Throw in Batman, boom, I'll see two more of these.
Obviously, y'all are going to put him number one, but not only did the other Alfred make suits, we were on a hunt for Wilfred in the other movies. Where was Wilfred here?
Exactly. He was in the Maharaji's harem or whatever, right? Like he was out there doing
very different thing. That's what
he was doing, right? He was working in the harem.
Greg, we heard about the League of Shadows. Movie. What about the League of Butlers that Alfred and his family come from? Like that's
you stole the words from my mouth, Andy. You stole the words from my mouth.
I love Andy here. Started to say, I know y'all going to put him number one, but as if he's not going to. I mean, this is coming from like, you know, Michael Caine fan number one.
Oh, I love Michael Caine. Oh, yeah. He's
give me a leg for double.
He's like, oh, that it's not a bloody double. You know, like he's just the best, dude. He's the fucking best, man. You got to put him number one.
And he does a good job, I think, of throughout the conversations with Bruce explaining why he's still there, right? I think especially when you know Bruce is very much like, I don't give a shit about my name, and he's like, it means something, it meant something to your father, right? And he's like, it's not your name, and he's like, I made them a promise to keep this going, to all the things he cared about, right? Take care of all the things he loved.
It's great. I'm glad you retweeted that video from yesterday though, because I had been meaning to I think I submitted that to Internet Explorers a long ass time ago, and I was like, man, sure. I want this video to be out there because it just gets me every time. He's like, all right, a little bit, bring it back, Michael. We don't need you. Go ahead. You never get me. Never. And he's like, oh, that's huge. What are you doing?
It's the opposite. It's the opposite. It's
such
so
a
true.
Good video.
So we are still within the podcast of best bat suit. Where do we want to put Batman Begins? Number one, Phantasm. Number two, Batman Returns. Number three, Batman Forever. Normal. Number four, 89 Batman. Three.
Underneath 89 Batman.
Number one for me.
That's where I'll start. That's where I'll start this.
You're saying underneath 89 Batman, better than Batman and Robin Batman, but underneath Michael Keaton's debut Batman suit.
I think the big issue we all had with the 89 Batman that we can all agree. Was that the neck was too fat and the cowl itself made his head look twice as big as it needed to. No. But I submit for the jury the evidence that Christian Bale's neck looks
massive.
Four times the size that it needs to look. It looks like he's wearing a scarf underneath the cowl. It's hideous. I say number six.
Hideous.
You say number six. So you're saying below Batman and Robin, above the Sonar Batman Forever
five.
Suit.
Number five.
Let's do it this way, everybody. Raise your hand if you think it's better than the. Maybe you just have to listen to me once in a while, Nick.
I tried to write it down, but you go too fast.
Raise your hand if you think it's better than the Sonar suit from Batman Forever. That's number six.
Yeah, of course it is.
We all raise our hands. This is how democracy works, Nick. Excuse me.
Raise your
hand if you think it's better than number five, George Clooney's Batman Forever suit or Batman and Robin suit. All right. Raise your hand if you think it's better than number four, 89 Batman. Everybody but Nick's hand is up.
I hate you all.
Raise your hand if you think it's better than number three, Batman Forever Normal, the Batman Forever Normal suit. Everyone's hands up but Nick. Raise your hand if you think it's better than number two, Batman Returns. I'm putting my hand down. And that means that it has lost. Andy and Kevin tried to vote it over Batman Returns, but fail. The new top three are Phantasm, Batman Returns, and now Batman Begins in his velour cape.
Look how dumb his hands look in it. I didn't want to bring this up to like.
They look so dumb. It looks like he's wearing dish gloves.
Yeah, he's wearing dish gloves.
Well, remember he is because he's got the electromagnetic things in the fingertips.
It looks dumb, right?
I agree. Look at him. It looks like he's like made of plastic and they haven't like put any detail into his hands yet.
Yeah.
He should buy some new gloves and get a nice discount. Using Honey, ladies and gentlemen. This episode's brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping that we really do. That's where today's sponsor, Honey, comes into play. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically tests them when you're checking out. If you're trying to get some dope gloves to fix your bat suit, all you got to do is search for it. than any store, probably any store, because we are talking over 30,000 supported sites. You put it into your cart, it'll run, all of a sudden, boom, you click apply coupons, and it's giving you the best deals possible. So few clicks, saving you so much money. I've been using this for a very, very long time, so it was kind of funny. I've saved thousands of dollars. Kind of funny, saved thousands of dollars. It's really silly not to use this. It's free, it's easy, you just need to install it once, and then it's there for you. You just wait a few seconds, Honey searches for coupons for the site that you're looking at. If Honey finds working codes, it'll apply the best one to your cart, and it works for pretty much any website, whether it's like a Best Buy all the way to something like an Etsy. Fantastic stuff. It's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. It's free and works with whatever browser you use. You can get Honey for free today at joinhoney.com/morning. That's joinhoney.com/morning. Make sure that you use that link so they know that Kinda Funny sent you. joinhoney.com/morning. Love you guys. Back to the show.
Andy, hit the song. Andy, hit the song.
Segway. What? How did Timmy do?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast within a podcast within the podcast, where we rank the segue Tim does as he goes into the ad. This is a brand new segment. It debuted last week on some other show. I forget which one. Internet Explorers. All right. So for this one, I'm your announcer, Greg. I'll turn it over to your hosts, Andy and Nick.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Of course, as you know, I think Tim did a lot better than he did last time. The last Internet Explorers, it was the equivalent to him tumbling down a small hill.
Unmitigated disaster. Yeah.
He really brought it back. Not his best work. Energy was a little bit low. I'm going to give him a 6 out of 10 for this.
I give him a 6.7 because the energy was low, but it was kind of on point.
He nailed the ad read. He always nails the ad read, ladies and gentlemen.
You could buy gloves, right? He said you could buy gloves and with Honey, and I sort of love that lead in. So I'm going to give it creativity a lot higher than the energy, but still 6.7 out of 10 for me.
Kevin Coelho from the press pit.
You know, I liked the energy he had, but there was a lot of fear attached to it. And unfortunately, I'm giving him a 3 out of 10.
Ooh, it's
a
3 out of 10.
Wow. Sorry, you got to bring it next time. You know what I mean? Yeah,
Greg Miller,
can I give my case?
Yeah, of course.
Can I give my thoughts? I just want to, you know, just give some context about it all. Fear, obviously, the topic of the movie, topic of things. Well, I feel like I deserve some bonus points for kind
Very
of being
conceptual.
On theme
That's
there.
True. That's
but
true.
More than that, I just want to let you guys know how hard it is to come up with these things on the spot and get them included with the segues of what we're talking about, because there's always the real fear that I have. Where does the fear come from, Kevin?
I know what it is.
Us making
saying funny. A bad word.
Yes.
Yep, cursing.
You guys were all talking and you're talking shit about Batman's gloves. And I'm like, we are so close to Nick saying how fucking stupid they look. And then I can't use my segue. Would then, you know, yeah, Nick would that, never. Nick would never.
Tim, that makes a lot of sense. And that's actually going to pull you up to it.
Oh,
5 out of 10.
Oh, 5 out of 10.
I'll take
there
it.
You go.
Yep. That
makes good
job.
Very good. Very good.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's another episode of Rank the Segue. Remember, Andy gave him a 6.7 out of 10. Nick gave him a 6. Kevin gave him a 5. What do you give him? Tweet at Maximum Cortez your scores. Just no context, just scores. We'll track them and we'll tell you later on another show or in a garbage can. We'll what we think of them.
We're going to light those things on fire.
Before I hand it over, I want to give a shout out to this podcast within a podcast within a podcast. Rank that Segue sponsor, Pumpkins. Andy, what are you going to
say? Before we move on, I just want to rank the handling of that section. All right. Just because in Internet Explorers, this section was introduced and nobody told me, and I was upset about it. And this time, Nick remembered all of 4 seconds before he said it out loud. So that was fun.
Everyone got that. Everyone got that same notification. And Kevin, that was a test. You passed.
You passed.
That's true. The real question is, will I remember to do this next week? In the answer.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, I got you now. Now that it's on the list, we got it. Don't worry about that.
Oh my god.
Now I want to transition from this podcast within a podcast to another podcast within the podcast, which is my favorite podcast within a podcast. God, saying that.
Is this Doc Gotham Delights? What is
it?
This?
It is Gotham's finest, baby.
Oh, and this is the worst one.
Secret Delights. Secret Delights.
What? Your secret delight. What's your secret delight?
Shh, don't tell me.
I thought Tim was saying it. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Gotham's Finest, or AKA Secret Delights, where we don't rank, we just give shout outs to the things we like that didn't expect to like on the movie.
I'm gonna say this. Here's one of the things.
Number one from 1966. Right. I will not take any questions or comments till the end. But here's the thing. Right now, little Johnny just got his first iPod. He just got his first iPod, right? What does he put in there? He goes, boobs. Yeah. What does he put in second? He puts in Batman. He finds this show. He has no idea that we're a Rick Rowland good time. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, man, they're going to review the movie. No, they're not. There's just a bunch of segments. They don't understand. He wants the history. Nick, he wants a history. Maybe if you, Nick Scarpino, kept up kindoffunny.com and you were the archivist we hired you to be, you'd have this all up there and people could go have a second screen experience. That's they could be at their smart refrigerator. They could have all the information and they go, hey, Alexa, play Kind of Funny in Review. And then on the calendar, right, there'd be like, watch Kind of Funny in Review. And then on the smart calendar, it would have the list of everything that happened. You know, this is, well, you ever think, confused. Nick? You ever think?
I never think. Okay, I never.
Number, the first Never. Secret delight of all time was 1966 Batman. Joey and Gia, they liked Catwoman's Russian costume, and everybody liked Adam West, or they liked Adam West Small's nipples. Then it was the Prince soundtrack for 89, the Penguin Army for Returns. For Phantasm, Kevin liked the motorcycle designs. I liked the no. Andy liked Alfred Stash. For Batman Forever, Kevin and Andy liked Drew Barrymore. Batman and Robin, Gia and Joey liked the head boobs. Kevin liked the gorilla dance. And then for the last Batman, Batman and they put music. I just wrote music by Klaus.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Oh, from Catwoman.
Catwoman, yeah.
I was like, what movie is this? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
That movie sucked. I blocked that whole week out of my life because of that movie.
I hate watch this that podcast. I hate
Tim,
this segment so
why?
Much.
I'm going to
– here's what Andy would love. Andy would love if In Review Now was just the hey, everybody, here's all our names. What did we think? And Andy goes, it's good. And then Tim would go, all right, see you later. This was sponsored by Honey. And then it ends. That's what Andy wants.
That's not a good segue.
That sounds great.
Yeah, he's got to get back there to plow in the fields in his backyard or whatever he does when he's not on camera.
Tim, look what I made for you.
Can I say? That's beautiful.
I love it. Okay, Nick. Like, what's
your? A couple things that I just notably always am blown away by when I watch this movie. Fucking love the ninja outfits in The League of Shadows.
Sure.
When he does the test. When they have to put the mask on and it's got the cool layered, like kind of ninja-y, but that's all dark gis. It's so fucking cool. I want one so bad. I want to like buy that and just roll in it.
My secret delight is the look that Bruce's dad gives him as he dies. Cause it makes me laugh every time.
Cause it's horrifying.
Cause he's just like, he's like, terrible. Bruce, don't be scared, Bruce. Like he's like smiling with his eyes open. It's so weird, man. It's so weird.
For me, Nick, I'm more in line with you on this because it is the ninja outfit. It is that scene. But my secret delight was the training montage. It is one of the best montages
good.
I have ever seen. It is so incredibly hype. Every single cut, every single action that they show Batman doing as he trains to be a goddamn motherfucking ninja.
Ninja.
Is so cool. The way the music rises, the dialogue back and forth between Roz and him is so powerful, so effective at building this character. I was secret delighted my heart out.
Is it not exactly the way Nolan sort of does the montage scene in Inception for like
it's beautiful.
We're gonna build dreams here, blah blah blah. And I got that same vibe because they set up such a perfect thing for Batman in this universe where you believe Batman could do anything because Ra's al Ghul says, you're trained right now to beat up six people. I'm gonna teach you how to take on 600 people. And that's like the perfect thing that sort of immediately he incepts this idea in your brain as a viewer, and you're like, Batman can fight anybody. It doesn't matter how many people they are, and that's
so
perfect
true.
Because you don't have that unrealistic expectation when you see Batman against 10 people. You're like, there's no way they could lose to Batman in this situation. But Ra's al Ghul is like, no, we're going to train you to do this, and it's so perfect.
And with that, that's where they first build up the idea of he needs to be more than a man. He needs to be this idea, and I love with no future spoilers like. There, that builds and that goes somewhere. And I love that it is here and shown in this movie and then expanded on so much. Such a beautiful thing. So well crafted. And it's just pure fucking hype. Gotta give
that,
a shout out.
Even in that montage, they set up something super important for the third movie, which I'm like, how did they actually had a plan? This is fucking bananas to me. Like, remember there's that moment where they're sitting around the fire and he's like, I lost the love of my life. And that has a, you're like, oh, that's that. When I first watched, I was like, oh, that's just a, little throwaway line to give him a little bit more, to humanize that character a little bit more, because he's clearly going to be the bad guy. No, we get a payoff for that. No future spoilers, but future spoilers in the third film. It's fucking awesome. They actually thought, they sat and they thought that how to write a trilogy of movies, and then dropped the mic and then left and never came back to the series, even though his name's on all the rest of the movies.
This is huge. Real Secret quick, guys. Delights. Kevin, this is the ugliest graphic I've
ever seen. Andy, why do you hate this? Why do you hate Andy, love?
I had to make it on the fly, and I just thought it was the most
It's just like color scheme and everything's just terrible about it. But I will say this, huge news. Huge news, everybody, coming from Twitter.com.
Is it about Batman?
In my notifications, Joey Noel ranked Tim Segway 7.2 out of 10.
Oh. We don't accept things from the audience. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I think we said
it was nice to me.
Yeah.
Sounds nice. I sound super nice to you, but I don't think we can.
You specifically said that the audience should just rank it without any explanation, right?
And then you said, I quote,
they should just send Andy a score. At no point did I say Andy then needs to narrate me the score from every nobody in the community like Joey Noel.
Oh my God. Wow.
I'm not opening the door to have a bunch of hacks come in, Joey Noel, or paper and crayons over here acting like she knows what's going on.
It's true.
She couldn't hack it a day on in review, all right? You think she knows? You think she can keep track of these podcasts within a podcast, within a podcast, within a podcast? No way.
Can you?
The business email today, got an email from a very nice best friend out there that said, "Hey, I'm a little concerned that Greg's a bully." Just wanted to bring that up, particular reason, but
just to put those concerns to rest, he 100% is. Are we going to rank the best Batman?
I mean, yeah, we have a whole bunch more stuff to do. I wanted to say my secret delight in this movie was the humor. There's many times I chuckle aloud watching this movie where I think the Michael Caine Bruce stuff, Bruce to Lucius, all that stuff. That's, I mean, obviously doesn't come in black is whatever, but like I love the line of when Batman, it's revealed to Lucius, when Batman wakes up and realizes that Lucius knows that he is in fact Batman, right? There's no like giant shock real moment to it. There's just that conversation of, you know how it is, you're at a party, someone's passing around a weaponized hallucinogen. I was like, it's just a funny thing. They all have this great banter together. Yeah. And I'm putting humor in. It's my secret delight.
I will say the thing I don't like, though, Greg, is there are at least like three different times in this movie where they do that thing. They do that really unfunny part in comedies where Bruce Wayne looks at the guy's like, "Nice jacket" or whatever, and
totally.
And then fucking the zoom in on Commissioner Gordon. I gotta get me one of those. Like you're right.
That's fair.
I'm so burnt out on that comedy. Andy, yeah,
Andy, you gotta shoot your shot. You gotta shoot your shot sometimes, just like Gary Oldman did with that accent that he does throughout this entire movie.
That's Gotham,
which is not good. And I love Gary Oldman, and I think he's arguably one of the best working actors living today. Sure. But man, he did this a lot. Well, I don't know.
Is it Buffalo Bill?
Yeah, I mean, like, there's moments where he goes. It's either Buffalo Bill or Edgar from.
From Men in Black.
Sugar, and water.
Sugar and water.
Well, this is actually an interesting thing, Kevin. Can you remove secret delights from the screen?
Please, God.
Thank you very much.
Shit.
Andy, I know, Andy, for the podcast within a podcast, you can't handle it. You've talked about it. You've been open on the podcast about it. Maybe I have been a bully about it. I say hit the song. You have no idea what I mean.
I know what you're going to do here.
You don't know what I'm going to do. You don't know what I'm going to do, all right?
Oh,
so
scary,
today...
Guys.
For our brand new segment, I'm going to say hit the song, but I'm going to give you a visual aid.
He scares me.
All right. So, Andy, I need you to hit the song.
Gonzo?
I'm Gonzo for Gordo. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the new podcast where we rank the Jim Gordons of the cinematic universe. You can get your I'm Gonzo for Gordo shirt at patreon.com/kindoffunny.
Nope, you can't.
Andy, I need you to make that shirt, and we need to make that a Patreon Platinum reward by the end of the year. All right, thank you very much.
No, just to be clear, you can't.
Greg,
that's not going to be a thing.
Greg, I'm going to give him a mustache.
Smart.
So this is one of those things, you know, I am a man who can admit when he's made a mistake. And one of the mistakes I've made here is that I haven't gone full Gonzo for Gordo. So now that we're here with Gary Oldman, fucking killing it. I don't care what you're talking about with the accent. Yeah, what a great Commissioner Gordon, or I'm sorry, you know, Gordon. Rise from what sergeant is he? He's sergeant by the end of this. I don't understand. Please,
I think he's lieutenant at the end of this.
Is he lieutenant at this?
Okay. Yeah, he starts as sergeant.
So he goes up and he goes.
I have so much art to make.
I'll put it in Trello. You're Gonzo for Gordo. We've had multiple Jim Gordons here. Obviously, we had Commissioner Gordon in 66 Batman. Then we're just gonna lump together the Gordon from the other one, right? I don't. Was Commissioner Gordon in Phantasm? I don't even know if he's in Phantasm. I don't remember ever seeing him in Phantasm.
I don't think he was.
So I mean, we wouldn't have to rank him. So right now we have to. I think we're saying Gary Oldman's the best Jim Gordon we've seen. Correct.
I mean, it's by a mile, right?
Yeah,
we love him. Great Gary. First best Gary probably. All right, so he's best up there. Gordon. No, I'm also saying best Gary. I know Gary Wood is
Gary. Okay, so he's better than Gary Wood.
I don't think we should say that.
Exactly. That's my mentor. Okay. Then for number two and three though, how's that net out? We're putting Burton
66
Gordon.
Because I mean, like, it was ridiculous, but like it was kind of funny at least. The Gordon in the 90s movies was just a mess.
Yeah.
He wasn't a character.
He just is taken. Yeah, that's the thing about, again, going back to why Nolan did such a good job in this. You care about Gordon. You want to see Gordon progress. You care about what he's going to do. He's a pivotal like character in this series. He's not just there to be background scenery like Gordon is in the rest of them.
Andy, you've said nothing, of course, because you hate the show now and you don't like the podcast and the podcasts that have become so successful.
This is the bully you're talking about, Greg.
I'm concepting the shirt. I'm going to make him, like, I'm going to give him the animated glasses, animated show glasses with the animated show mustache.
When you say him, you're talking about Gonzo. It's going to be Gonzo?
Gonzo. Oh, Gonzo's going to look like Gordon, very much, maybe a little suit jacket, a little coat or whatever, but it's going to be all just kind of one color. I'm thinking like white on a blue shirt or maybe yellow on a black shirt. I'm still kind of concepting.
I understand. I appreciate that. Cool. I think Tim sold me there. I like that because I do like that. 66 Gordon was funny. He's, you know, very campy, obviously, and very, you know, whatever, like, you know, black and white to it. But the problem with the Burton, and I'm just calling him the Burton or the quadrilogy Gordon, right, is the fact that he just was a pushover and he sucked. He's always, here's the signal. Wait for it. Now hit it. You know what I mean? And then he shows up in his pajamas when Chase Meridian is trying to fuck Batman up there. Like, he doesn't so do funny. Anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Does he?
All right, there you go. Then number one, Gary Oldman. Number two, 66. Number three, Burton Gordon.
What about J.K. Simmons?
He's not in this in review. I don't. Why? First off, that movie hasn't happened yet. Secondly, he's not. We're not even putting that movie into this thing of movies.
But we didn't watch those movies.
Why don't we rank the Gordon Fisherman in here too? You know what I mean?
I forgot to bring this up. Kev, can you bring the graphic up again for Secret Delight?
The Gordon Fisherman.
Yeah, give me one
second. Hey, what is it? Thank the Gordon Fisherman.
I want to give a shout out to the way that they say it, Lucius. Like when he says his name, he says Lucius.
It's because he's British.
Morgan Freeman?
No, I only remember Michael Caine is the only one I ever heard say Lucius.
Because they had that moment where he's like Alfred.
Fucking cool.
Lucius.
Always a pleasure. And he goes, Lucius.
Lucius. It dips a little bit into like the when people do like Star Wars fan films and they have a British accent for no reason. Hello, my lord, my liege. I could sense your foul stench from a mile away. Lucius.
Wait, I want to.
That was a secret delight. My apologies.
I'd like to add Katie Holmes, just because I wish they had kept her as Rachel. And that's
you know
all
what, Kevin?
She had to do that Mad Money movie.
That is a great point you're making right now. Every time I watch this, and it's not like I'm the biggest Katie Holmes fan out there, but I'm like, they had great chemistry, in my opinion. I think her and Christian Bale did great on team together.
Christian Bale,
bummed now they couldn't bring her back.
There's several scenes where it's like, they want you to think Christian Bale's like 20, right? They're supposed to be contemporaries. And Katie Holmes is a lot younger than Christian Bale's in a lot, like when he's coming back and he's like going with her to the Joe Chill gets killed.
The trial,
yeah. That like, I feel like he was supposed to be a lot younger and like that's where we see the disparity.
They put lip gloss on him, so that's...
Is he heavier? He looks a bit heavier.
He had the bangs also.
Yeah,
he
did have the bangs. Yeah.
No, I just like, I was... there's no disrespect to Maggie Gyllenhaal, but she just brings a different energy to the role. And I just thought Katie Holmes had like that really good like... kind of purity that that counterbalance needed.
Yeah.
Whereas in the next one, it kind of just gets a little bit muddled, and I just don't. Spoilers. They don't have the same chemistry.
No future spoilers.
No future spoilers.
But while we're here, Andy, do you smell that?
No, oh, Jesus Christ!
It smells like Belle of the Batman, a podcast within a podcast. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is where we rank the love interests of the Batman cinematic universe that we're doing here in review. Right now, it's number one, Vicky Vale in 89. Number two, Andrea in Phantasm. Number three, Catwoman in Returns. Number four, Benjamin Bratt slash Tom Long slash Long
in Catwoman. Long.
Number five, Chase Meridian Forever. Number seven, Russian Catwoman in 66. Where do you want to put Katie Holmes, who I do agree with you, Nick, has great chemistry, is a fantastic actress in this, and I was sad to see the conflict with Mad Money starring Diane Keaton and Queen Latifah.
This is so far beyond number one that it's like silly to
Yeah, she's number one.
But she does like turn him down, though, you know?
What's that?
She like turns him down at the end, though, and it's like,
yeah, but that's great, right? That's because she's a
psychopath. You don't want
a real human being who would go, "You're doing some crazy shit, and I don't really want to be a part of that." And also, I'm doing what you should be doing, which is using your power and influence for good out in the light of day. But I don't know. I love the scene where she slaps him. I think that is her best scene. And
multiple times,
looks out of the gun, doesn't say anything, just slaps him twice in the fucking face because she's like, "You're
better than this." Another conveniently kind of rushed Christopher Nolan moment scene in this movie is Bruce gets out of the fucking water with his two foreign chicas, right? And he's like, and he's all wet. And Katie Holmes walking into the restaurant. She's like, "Bruce," she's like, "I heard you were back." And he's like, "Oh, hey, you know, all this isn't really me." And she gives him like that really important line of like, you know, like, it's not about who you are inside. It's about what you do that defines you. And that scene is like so fast to me because it's like they hadn't seen each other this whole time. And then he sort of goes, "Katie, this or, you know, whatever it is, this isn't
Rachel
me. I'm not this person." And she's like, "I don't believe that." But it's like, this is the first time they're interacting since he got back. Like, how are you going to jump to that already? Like, I don't know. It just felt like really, really fast.
Well, because she's, see, I like that scene,
but I think it's really, really fast, but we wouldn't get that incredible most hype moment.
Fuck.
When she's like, "Who are you?" It's not about who I am, but what I do to, or it's not about what I do to defines me. Bruce? And he jumps down with the music swelling. And Hans Zimmer's on fucking steroids. Hans Zimmer's just like, "Let's go off right here." It's the coolest fucking moment in this movie, man. Oh my God. My nipples were so hard in that part, dude.
I love it. It's so well done. Well done, that moment.
It's awesome.
And again, even just that moment, best Bruce Wayne. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, yeah.
Like, 100%. He's great. He like gets the Playboy stuff down. We get the three sides of Bruce. Like, the Bruce and Alfred feels so authentic and so great to the character. Then we get him pretending to be this asshole at the party. I love how quick that shift goes when Ra's al Ghul reveals himself
at
Wayne Manor. And like,
super just awkward.
The way he just jumps into just being a dick, and it's like, wow, I believe you right now. This is rad. And then as Batman, he's fucking awesome. God, what a movie this is. I want to watch it right now. Why are we doing this stupid show?
I know. I love, by the way, just to dial it back, I love that shot where he's like, "What am I supposed to do?" And Alfred's like, "I don't know, buy sports cars, buy stuff you're not supposed, like you can't, like no one else.
Buy things that aren't for sale."
And then it cuts and it's a dope ass Lamborghini, pulls up. He gets out, the door opens. You see one of the women that he's with in the front seat. You're like, "Oh, he's got a, you know, beautiful date by his side." No, the door opens up and one's sitting on another one's lap. I'm like, that is so perfectly written. Because
yeah,
what a little fucking shit thing to do. This rich billionaire piece of shit. Not one, not two. Has to be seen with two beautiful women. I thought that was such a cool touch. And then, of course, you know, he's just clearly faking it and going overboard with it. But I remember that scene being in the trailer of the film, and I'm like,
"I just bought this hotel, and there's gonna be some changes to the pool rules." And the guy's like, "I'm a waiter, so you're giving me a check. I don't understand."
Does he have the authority? Does the maitre d' of the restaurant and the hotel have the authority, Greg, to sell the entire building?
I hope so, and I hope one day we're rich enough to find out.
I'm gonna try that at the next Cheesecake Factory I go to. I'm just gonna stuff a $5 check in like a waiter's pocket, and be like, "I'm buying this restaurant, sir.
Sure,
I want another Diet Coke refill, stat."
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm working on
a lot of
the
great
graphic,
performances.
Just,
Yeah.
I think she's number one. 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I agree.
I think I'm proud of you guys because I was a little worried about this one.
No.
I thought Nick was going to push some bullshit. No. You showed a lot of growth, character development.
Yeah. I mean, this is
one of those. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
It's one of those where I don't think, you know, I know you like to pin it on nostalgia or whatever before when we've complained and argued about movies and bickered on any show, not even just this like thing or whatever. But this is just such head and shoulders a better movie than anything we've done. And I think that resonates in every regard where we're talking about characters and motivation and writing and music and, you know,
choreography.
I mean, it goes on and on and on of just like, yeah, like this is a full-fledged Christopher Nolan movie. This is, you know, as great as I think 89 is and how much I enjoy that or whatever, like this is a way more real interpretation and real. This is the Batman that I know, that I think of when I think of Batman, right? Of like, no, he doesn't kill. This is his thing. He won't break his word. Again, even to what we're talking about, Tim, right? Of like, okay, cool. Like, how do you bring in comic book elements that are so fantastical, but work on the page, but put him in here? Like Ra's al Ghul, right? Like, not having a Lazarus pit, but the, you know, League of Shadows having been around for millennia, right? And sacking Rome and doing all these things and hiding the true identity of Ra's. And that's how they're able to, you know, keep it going, keep everybody there. Yeah, Nick.
Well, does he have a Lazarus pit? Because I think it is that anyone can be Ra's al Ghul. I think the idea of Ra's is the Lazarus pit, right? Or like when Ra's dies, it doesn't matter because he's really Ra's. Do we really even know that he's the Ra's al Ghul? Maybe he is Dukar.
Well, that's my thing. I definitely think it's like a ceremonial title kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
That you and rise up and
That's what's so cool about that. He found practical ways to do these fantastical things, not the least of which the Scarecrow mask, right? How the hell do you introduce like all these crazy effects? Well, I mean, obviously, I guess the fear toxin has been rooted in the comic books, but that feels like it feels real in the world when he hits him with that toxin. And then all of a sudden you see like the fucking that visual of Batman with just the
stuff pouring black out of his mouth,
pouring out of his mouth. And then it cuts to reality. Awesome. It's so well done.
That's always been one of those memorable scenes for me in this movie, because I love seeing the psychosis versions of whatever it is that's happening in the movie. Mm-hmm. I saw somebody in our Twitch chat a little earlier say that they didn't like Scarecrow and his involvement, or maybe that he was kind of a waste in here. I thought it was awesome. I've always loved, I love Cillian Murphy. First off, I think he's an awesome actor, and just sort of the way he is implemented. And I know, Tim, you didn't love sort of the Gotham is about to go like crazy right now at the very, very end. Like those stakes are a little too high. I love that sort of, you know, Batman wouldn't take down Gotham. So we're getting this other guy to take down Gotham. I think that's so perfect the way it's sort of like Greg's camera is keyed right now.
Greg's camera. I think isn't it that everybody's keyed? Doesn't Kevin have all of us keyed at any given moment?
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't.
Nick.
Nick has you've got a green hat. If you look, your bill is green. I don't know why Greg's keyed.
Okay. Huh. My bad. I got it shotgun. But anyway, yeah, I love that Bruce Wayne was supposed to be the instrument to take down Gotham, and then once he fucks over and destroys it, then you start sort of, you know, putting those pieces together, because every time we see Falcone talk to Cillian Murphy, they always talk about this one guy. Like, they're always like, oh, he's not going to like this, or he's going to hate that, or whatever. And I love that it ends up being Ra's al Ghul's involvement in Gotham. Nick Scarpino, kind of funny. Go ahead.
Now, I have a question for everyone that I'd like to go around and vote on. Is not saving someone the same as killing them?
Yeah. Well, I want to do this too, but I like that we're having a good conversation about Scarecrow / Ra's al Ghul.
Okay, right? I apologize.
Because it does roll into Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast. But we're not doing that jokey part of it. Then. Yeah, I want to get back to that. What do you got?
Real quick, to something Andrew's saying, I don't think I did a good job of explaining what I meant. It's not that I disliked the Gotham stakes and stuff. I'm saying I'm actually impressed that Nolan was able to pull it off, because that is so big compared to the rest of the movie. And he didn't need to do that, but it worked. Like, I'm impressed with how much this movie accomplishes from the small ninja level all the way up to Gotham's about to fucking go to hell.
We
also didn't need to have all those pillars on the monorail that Batman would clearly get caught on in his rope. But hey, man, you got to do what you got to do.
You too got to do what you got to do. I love the Scarecrow toxin stuff. It's so cool. And anytime you see his mask and there's like different shit coming out of it, it's scary and it's fantastic. Yeah. And like, my God, they made Scarecrow a cool character.
That's see, they did, shocking. But I want him to do more. Like, I feel like he's underutilized in this. And like, and not even like,
I think that was to good effect, though. Like I enjoyed that there was like how much he was used. Now, what the thing I didn't like though is when he was used more in like the, well, not him, but like the toxins were everywhere. The effects lost their luster when it wasn't on his mask. I didn't like seeing other people have the effects. When Batman's going over with the weird glowing shit, that's not scary. It's goofy. I get it would be scary if you were in the situation, but every time we see the Scarecrow himself, it's fucking horrifying. Well, I mean, it's just like weird ass lights and shit. It's like, I don't know.
Let me ask this though. I mean, real talk, is Scarecrow, I know he's one of like the lead in the rogues gallery, but he's not really a AAA Batman bad guy. You know what I mean? He's not on the same level as Ra's al Ghul. He ain't taking over the fucking world. Scarecrow's out there.
Well, I don't need him to
drugs.
Do that. It's just that thing of like, I just feel like you get him in like what, three scenes really being Scarecrow. And in the last one, he goes out like a bitch. And I know we said earlier that we like that he can be taken out that easily. And I agree, but even just we talk about choreography of whatever that
one. Yeah, but don't face
and rides it up.
Don't forget, we see him buying pot in a parking lot. So that's, he's got something to do. You know, exactly. He's like selling weed or some shit. I don't know what he's doing.
Exactly. Well, probably the drugs and the toxins and all that jazz. Whatever, but like, yeah, like it's that thing where I think.
As Scarecrow, he's not great. But Cillian Murphy, that character is terrible.
Yeah, no, totally.
And I think he's so good at it. And again, this is all about how everything begins. It's not called Batman Begins, Greg. It's Batman and Friends Begin.
It is Batman if Friends Begin. What I do enjoy about it is the holistic plot of it, where I think that if you were watching that and you see Ducard left there and you don't know he's Ra's al Ghul, you don't really are you expecting him to come back? Are you expecting him to be the person, the big reveal? And then the fact that it overall is one giant circle, right? Where you at the end, even like when Ra's but Ducard, right, are in the training montage with Bruce and says, it's not your fault your parents were killed, it's your father's. And really turns it on his head, and like it was his inaction, right? And that gets Bruce Superman, they go at it. To then even jump to the end, right, where again, he's like, Ra's is laying it all out and just being like, we've done this before in a million other cities. We were, you know, here we tried a new tactic. And it's that thing where, you know, they tried with economics here to ruin Gotham. And at the heart of it, they are part of the reason, if not the reason, that Bruce's parents got killed, right? That it goes that far back and that this is one big plan, which again, to what we were talking about earlier, is my not even anger or anything like that or criticism real, but it's just like where the microwave emitter does feel like it was just shoved in there. Like even if like it almost as if that scene was an insert after a test audience where someone got lost as to where it was, and like, well, we'll make it very clear that this was a Wayne Enterprise thing and this is what we did and yada yada yada, where it's like, I don't need that as much. I think it works without it, but it works fine with it as well. But it's this idea that everything is connected even though you didn't see it coming together. It's that what we talk about with, you know, when we did Nolan in review, and you go and you watch those movies and you see how, yeah, when we finished The Prestige, and I wanted to go watch The Prestige again, right, to catch all the little things you guys were talking about that I missed. It's a similar thing here where obviously these are broader strokes. It's a comic book movie, it's a Batman movie or whatever, but they do all come together. It's another movie where they really don't waste your time giving you information that isn't going to be influence the plot in some positive direction.
Yeah, there's very little fat on this. I think also one of the things that I really appreciate and respect is they made a very smart choice with that back and forth between Ra's al Ghul and Bruce Wayne in the manor. Is that there's a moment where when I first watched it, I was like, are they gonna say that Ra's al Ghul ordered the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne, and he didn't. And I think that was incredibly smart. It was a byproduct of the stuff that they were doing, but it wasn't a direct order. And I think that was super, as far as like keeping Bruce Wayne's motivations through the next two films, I think that was incredibly important. Because had he said, hey man, I had your parents killed and it didn't work, and then after he killed Ra's al Ghul, it's like, oh, I guess you may have lost some of your steam. But in this regard, it's like, no, the fight continues.
Yeah, and also I really liked how they used Gotham. Like, this Gotham was really great to me, like in the believable way of like the way that they had the what's up next.
I will say again, a couple touches of production design that I didn't love about the movie is that Gotham feels like two distinctly different places. For the most of the movie, it feels like modern day Chicago. And then when we get into the Narrows, it is just completely out of place for a city that's that big, where it's like, why are we suddenly in like a slum in a totally different country right now? It looks like a very depressed part of like Thailand or something like that, which is totally, totally weird. I just always think when they cut to that shot of the city where it's like you've got all these beautiful buildings and they're just like 5 feet away from the most impoverished place on the planet. I never understood that.
I don't know. That reminds me of the point, right? I think that, yeah, it reminds you of Skid Row in L.A. Like, I didn't know L.A. could look like Skid Row until I saw Skid Row. And so that, like, I don't think that's totally unbelievable. I think it's just meant to show sort of, you know, the capitalism and the inequality, the money.
I think from a production design, like, I would have liked them to have a little bit more parity in the way, because the buildings don't even look like they were made by any of the same developers that would have made the outside buildings, which doesn't necessarily make sense. Like, even if you look at, like, lower income housing in San Francisco, they don't look like shanty towns compared to everything else that's around them. And I guess maybe you could find a couple examples of them, but I always thought that those, I'm like, they're really nailing home that anyone that lives in the Narrows is like really, really bad off. And I wish they dialed that back like 10%, just a little bit. Cause it feels like that's where we start getting into, in my opinion, like it's a little too comic booky.
I thought it really worked. What I didn't like was Thomas Wayne being literally infallible. He is just
my wife perfect. Just said, have you been to the Tenderloin?
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. But yeah. Thomas Wayne, they just set him up, and he's only a part of the story for like, what, 5 minutes? And literally, he's just perfect. He's just like, oh yeah, man, you know, charity. And after I do some charitable things, I'm going to be really, really, really good to my son. I'm going to be awesome to my wife. I'm just a great guy. You know,
what's wrong with being a great guy?
You get five minutes with him. Yeah, like that's what it's going to be.
And also, we're seeing it. I think we're also,
he literally dies, as Andy's saying, comically positive. Like, it's,
I mean,
weird.
He's trying to be nice.
Like, I got to go back and look at it.
Yeah, you got to look at it.
Yeah,
it's
something.
Yeah.
Bring it up
like
right now. Bring it up if you can, Greg. Or Kevin, I was going to say, bring it up if you can. Bruce, don't be scared, Bruce.
It's all right. It's all right.
It's so bizarre. It's so off-putting.
But also, yeah,
I think it is kind of, I think what Kevin was about to say was, I think it's meant to be Bruce sort of like, we're looking at his dad from Bruce's eyes, right? Like, his dad is perfect. His dad is this thing that he lost as a kid. So we're sort of seeing him be the best he can be. But I just thought a lot of the Waynes, I guess mostly the dad, since he was showcased the most, was just kind of lame. I just didn't really like the dad. Yeah.
They give the mom nothing to do. If you watch that first scene, she doesn't. She's just in like three or four scenes. She has one line. What's wrong? And it's like, okay. And I get that the relationship is supposed to be about the dad and the son. That is kind of the pivotal thing. But his mom died too. Wouldn't that be kind of like he's like, oh my god, his mom gets shot. And he goes to his dad's side. Is like, Dad, are you okay? Mom's dead. Mom's just bleeding out there. She's like, you could say like no.
Mom died instantly, and he knew.
Yeah. And then they're on the train, and he's sitting. You know, it's Daddy Wayne and Mama Wayne.
Daddy Wayne.
They're talking to their son about, like, we get that huge exposition fucking out of nowhere of like, this is what the city does, and we built the train, and this is why I'm so good, and we're trying to make the city better because we want the audience to feel for me whenever I do die. And also over there in that government building or whatever in the Wayne Tower, we have the best men working. And the mom's just sitting there like the best men and greater men. And he's just always like saying, like, it's always man.
Yeah, and
the mom's just sitting there like, I'm here too.
A cool thing about just totally aside, now that you brought up the train again, is that Thomas Wayne is saying that they donated the train to better Gotham. So they made the train to better Gotham. And then later, Batman breaks the destroys the train to save Gotham. I just like that.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Robert Blanco in the chat says they saved the mother love for Greg's favorite movie.
Yeah, I said that too, but I was talked over.
Oh,
I heard it, Greg.
Thank you, buddy. For all of us. I think that it's weird when Nolan movies miss the mark with writing, because there's obviously so much care put into every line and like everything has reason. And I think it's bizarre that they made the choice to have a character say, you look so much like your father, when Christian Bale does not look like his father. Isn't that weird?
Yeah they could have cast. Yeah, but they could have cast someone else.
But if you're going to bring attention
if you're going to make
that
line,
looks like Christian Bale.
It's not hard, especially because you don't need him to be a great actor because he has two lines. And one of them, he didn't deliver.
Generic
super
white
well.
Guy. They're both generic white guys. I thought it was fine.
They have different hair colors.
Well, you're a blonde. Like, what was your dad?
Well, also,
he was a motherfucking brunette.
Dad. See that? So it can happen.
Blonde.
It can happen. Yeah.
Just like you. What do you?
Like, you know, dark brown. You know, my dad has black hair. You know.
Yeah, Kevin has green hair.
Okay.
That's the logic we're using here.
Sure. I have green hair.
What bits do we have left? So we did that.
We still have to rank the bad guys. We're in Ragu Bagu, but then Nick just abandoned his post. Where do we want to put Ra's al Ghul and this scarecrow. Currently, Ragu Bagu looks like this. Number one, 89 Batman the Joker. Number two, Phantasm, Joker and Phantasm. Number three, Batman Returns. Number four, Batman and Robin. Number five, Batman Forever. Number six, 66.
I do have a segment song for this that I just thought of right now.
Well, please go for this. Ragu Bagu.
A segment. Oh, wait. This is Rogue's Gallery, though, right? I guess this is Ragu Bagu situation. Because I was thinking, like, a segment so sweet, it's filled with calories. Now it's time to rank the Rogue Gallery. It's just. I like
that the one podcast within a podcast you thought of a song for is the one that has a podcast song. You know what I mean?
Ragu.
Bagu. We've already done everything. Where do you want to put him? Ra's al Ghul.
It's another example. It's clearly number one, right? Like, they're so good. And there's, I feel like we can have some criticisms here or there, but like, they're criticisms on a level of like real thought as opposed to the other ones where it's like whatever's de facto number one is just because we need a number one. The other ones don't deserve to be number one. This does.
Nick, where do you want to put the Ragu Baggies for this one? We're right now, number one's 89 Batman Joker.
We're ranking Ra's and Scarecrow, I assume.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I, as much as it kills me to say, I think we got to put Ra's al Ghul at number one.
Yep.
I think his motivations are super clear. I think you understand them. I think you maybe don't sympathize with them, but the way he sets everything up, how clever he is, the fact that you think he's dead and he's really the real, he's not Ducard, he's really Ra's al Ghul. He runs this baller ass League of Shadows. Come on. I think he's number one. I think he's, yeah. That's my opinion.
I don't argue it. I think I might have voted number two, but this might actually be what we're talking about before with nostalgia or whatever. I think I like the pop and I think I like Jack Nicholson's performance more in terms of this crazy, colorful, whatever world. But this, again, back to what I was saying earlier, this is a real movie. These are characters who have motivations that are clearly spelled out and written and you feel for and you're on a ride with. So I would never argue.
Yeah, and I think you know they always say it's kind of a beat you over the head with this old saying, the old adage, but like the best antagonists are the protagonists in their own stories. And I feel like if you were to write this, you could potentially flip the script and write it the opposite way where you do write, like you could see Ducard's motivations and why he's moving through his story. And so I think that's, and also Liam Neeson just is so suave and looks cool in a suit, but also looks cool mustache. In a ninja outfit. He's got that, he's got that little kind of goatee-ish mustache thing going on.
And he sort of shows how dominant he could be as a fighter when they're in the train and Bruce starts fighting with him and he's like, show me something new. This is all you got. Like, I love that line.
That's actually a huge point too, is that Liam Neeson, and maybe it's because of all that training he did with Taken, but like maybe Taken was after this. I don't know. He sells that, the choreography in that, to the point where I'm like, Christian Bale looks like he's moving about 5% slower. He gets ass whooped by him, but.
Well, he was also drugged, right? And Taken was 3 years after this. 2008.
No, good point. Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow. To me. Time. What is time? Time's crazy.
The finale for the podcast within a podcast of court is Ragu Bat Guys, where we rank the bat guys. Who is the best Batman? Number one, it's 89 Keaton. Number two, it's Phantasm, Kevin Conroy. Number three, it's Returns Keaton. Number four is Forever Kilmer. Number five is 66 West. Number six is Batman and Robin's George Clooney. Where do you want to put?
I got
to
go number three here. I just wanted to see Tim's reaction. You're such a bitch.
You're such a little fuck.
I literally had a question in my brain right there. I was like, do I just go with Andy on this one to fuck with him? Or what do I do?
So number one, right?
He's number one, man.
Again, he's perfect. So good.
He's just so good to watch.
And Tim mentioned earlier, he sells all the aspects that we expect. Mm-hmm. It's being Batman, obviously. It's being the billionaire playboy Bruce Wayne. The sort of asshole chumminess when he needs to be. It's Christian Bale, dude. He's a fucking great actor, and he was just a joy to watch in this whole movie.
Also, Andy, can we just take a second and talk about his hair? Good is his hair in this?
It's good. Great head of hair, especially at the very, very end
when it's all slicked back.
Yeah. But he's got the two little
wisps. Front.
And Rachel Dawes is kind of breaking his heart, being like, you know, not now, maybe in the future, but right now. This city needs Batman, and he's got two. He just looks good.
Andy, I can't do the. I can't spare the two little wisps. Everything's got to go right back, otherwise too much scalp.
They need to contribute.
They have to contribute to the overall. It's like the foundation's being held up by those. If you take one away, the whole thing just crumbles.
Andy, hit me with some of that haiku interview.
Seven syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line.
Jesus. It's terrifying. Wait, before we get into Haiku and review, did you guys debate the merits of whether or not he actually, in fact, committed murder at the end?
We never did.
No, can we talk about that for a second? Because this is the only big glaring thing I have an issue with here is that he was like, I'm not going to kill you as he's about to stab
you. Just because I won't kill you.
But I don't have to save you either. Is, and I'm going to put it, and we can go around and talk about it real quick, is not saving someone when you have the ability to the same as killing them?
Yeah.
Starting off with Kevin Coelho.
So now my question is.
There's no questions.
In this particular point, I think, yes, it is murder.
It's murder, right?
If for any reason it heightens your chance of dying, then it's not murder. I just want to make that clear out there.
This might be premeditated murder too, because he planned this whole thing with Gordon as his accomplice.
I do think that if you have the capability to save Bundy, to save somebody and choose not to, then that is some sort of a crime. Now, granted,
but as long as you're not putting you in danger.
If you were just some regular civilian and was like, I'm about to die here, I got to save myself. Like, I think at that point, you cannot blame him for this. But the fact that he's like, I could save you if I wanted, but I'm not.
This is literally premeditated, right? Like, it's not a split decision, a split second decision. It's him. He's already thought it through enough to be like, here's how I'm getting out of this. Fuck you. And he bounces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is definitely one of those cases where we're looking at it like, it's a movie. We need a badass line. If we give him a cool one-liner, it's going to be worth it, even if it doesn't make logical sense for this character, which is kind of a bummer. I'm with you, Nick. It's murder.
I will say, though, that as much as
murder.
This movie is filled with a lot of great one-liners. One of them that was like really cheesy and shitty that I totally didn't hate was Cillian Murphy telling him, you need to lighten up. And he lights him on fire, dude.
That's pretty great.
That was crazy. All right, finish the Haiku and Review song.
If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in Review. Haiku in Review.
Thank you.
When did
that,
you
Andy.
Change the words? Perfect. Elise sings your original version on she does Conjuring Interview. It's surprising that you changed the words.
Haikus are hard to find. God fucking bless her.
I didn't know we were searching for them.
You could go to patreon.com/kindoffunny if you're trying to find them to leave your review in haiku form, just like Bryce did. Bryce says, Batman fights Scarecrow. Oh shit, Batman's on fire now. Wait, was that Joffrey? Yes,
it was.
Yes,
it was.
Yeah, we didn't even mention Joffrey was in this.
Yeah,
that's my secret delight, Joffrey.
Yeah,
yeah.
Joe Mertens says Cillian Murphy's Scarecrow is a scene stealer. He's here, the Batman.
That's so
the Batman.
Dope line. I fucking love it. Are you kidding me, Nick? What's your problem with it?
Can I? I love the scene. I love the scene, right? But I don't like the fact that the goons get to talk. For 5 minutes before Batman, I hear he could disappear into the thing. I hear he can fly. I hear he drives a Honda. Like, why are you talking? The guy's up there somewhere. Point your fucking guns up there and start shooting. What's going on?
They're scared. I don't know if you understand. There's a very subtle subplot to this about fear. This is one of the things they sprinkle it in
they
very quietly.
Mention it.
I'll have to watch it again because that one went right over my head.
You'll need to catch that. Yeah.
If you watch it with commentary, Nolan here is like, and this is where I wanted them to understand that they're afraid of Batman.
Yeah,
oh, I understand. Okay.
Yeah, there's a really good Movies with Mikey breakdown about how this movie is actually about fear, which is like, you don't get it the first time.
You don't.
That's not how he sounds.
when we did Nolan in review, I was always talking about the whiteboard series where Nolan would always like do the diagrams of the storytelling. Yeah, this one.
He wrote
a lot
down.
Of fear stuff.
He just wrote fear.
Yeah. Jules Vuonato writes in and says, it's not who we are, what we do that defines us. Not revenge, justice. God, it's cool. God. So damn cool. Daniel Edmund says, I'm 5 minutes in and finally a good one. Holy shit, a good one.
Yeah, it's so good, dude. Like, and then obviously we get to the very, very end with the Joker sort of tease.
So good.
And I am sitting alone in my bed like a fucking loser. I just finished eating a great plate, a little package of wings, Greg, from Halal Wings Plus.
Spicy lemon pepper.
I'm sitting there in the bed and I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I couldn't imagine being in a theater witnessing that, dude.
I remember seeing it opening night and marking out so hard at that. And it was 2005, it was 15 years ago, 2005, right? I don't remember who I was with. I think it was probably my ex, but I remember like literally grabbing my chair and then being like, what am I? It's a playing card. It's a playing. And then there was a playing card. And I was like, are they going to flip it? Are they going to flip it? And they flipped it. It was the Joker. Like, oh, my God.
Now, this guy over here. He's about to say some fucking bullshit. What do you have for us?
Okay.
I don't like it because I learned in film studies that Woody Allen would never have done it this way.
Let's definitely not bring up Woody Allen. I, at first, every time I see this, don't like this scene because it feels very tacked on. It feels like it was a reshoot. It feels like they were like, oh, this movie is going to be big. We just screened it. Everyone loves it. Can you guys quickly get back in costume and do this? And every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, God, I kind of wish they didn't do this, until it gets to the point where he gets onto the – he like walks onto the ledge and Gary Oldman goes, hey, I never thanked you. And he goes, and you'll never have to. I'm like, fucking man tier. Jump off a thing. Let's fight the Joker. Let's go.
Fucking good. It's so incredible. It's such a great tease. And I will say, when we talk about Batman standing on stuff,
he's handling a lot of stuff in this.
I hate that first scene where he's like, where they do that cool helicopter shot, only because, Tim, it looks like Batman is like, it looks like he's 15 feet tall.
His cape is 100,000 feet. Because
you don't know where Batman begins. And the building ends. Like, it's such a weird looking scene. But it's obviously a great Nolan like helicopter shot. I love when Nolan does that, but it looks so bizarre.
How about the moment where we're on the subway, we're on the elevated train stairs, and Katie Holmes turns around and he's just perched on like one of the railings? My first question would be like, why are you sitting on the railing? Why are you just standing like up. That? How are you balancing like that? The small little railing. It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look at the script here. The final lines, Nick, I could not disagree with you more about the Joker thing. It is the most hype thing, and I don't think it feels like a reshoot because all the dialogue there is so fucking great.
It just felt weird. Like, the movie just had a beautiful, like, kind of a good ending, and then this just kind of feels like, obviously, like, it's a, you know, it's a little afterthought. It's a fun little tease for the next movie. It just kind of felt out of place the first time I watched it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. But then, of course, we get that line, and I'm like, fuck you. That's one of the best lines ever written. You'll never have to.
But I think that it's all earned so much where when the movie starts and we get the title sequence, I don't know if you guys noticed, you don't get the title sequence. It's just a bunch of bats and it kind of makes a symbol. And then at the end, when we get this Gordon Batman thing, I was just like, there's a lot of weirdness out there right now. The Narrows is lost. We still haven't picked up Crane or half the inmates of Arkham that he freed. We will. Gotham will return to normal. Will it? What about Escalation? Carrying semi-automatics. They buy automatics, and it builds and builds and builds. And then he has that line, jumps off. Batman Begins. This is the beginning of Batman. Like the Rogues Gallery, all this stuff. It's like, this is where it starts. Fucking awesome.
I'll just say this. Not the best ending. It's not the best ending that we could see for a Nolan trilogy Batman movie.
Okay. But like, so far, it is the best ending to a Batman movie, right?
I'm just saying, when we get to the next one, pay attention to how everything just hits that one fucking moment, and then he has the balls to just let it go. Credits.
Balls.
What part of stop talking about future movies?
We got a playing car with this guy that's got a mask on. He can't breathe without it for some stupid reason.
God damn it, Nick. You're fucking useless. All right. Now it is time to rank Batman Begins. Let's just put it out there. Does anybody debate that it's number one?
No, it's number one.
Number one with a bullet.
So that makes it pretty easy. Batman Begins is number one. But ladies and gentlemen, I said we'd do it. We have to do it. Ranking the Nolan Cinematic Universe. At number one, we have Interstellar. Number two, we have Inception. Oh, wow. Number three, we have The Prestige. Oh. Number four, we have Memento. Number five, Dunkirk. Number six, Following.
I didn't know that's how you spelled Interstellar with a B A.
What's up, Greg?
Nothing. It's fine. Don't worry.
So, I mean, the top four here: Interstellar, Inception, Prestige, Memento. Right? It's gonna be in there, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Interstellar, Prestige. I put it right below Interstellar, in my opinion.
I put it below Inception.
You put it below Inception.
Yeah.
See, again, this is where I start to drift away from you guys. I remember correctly. I did not love watching Inception again back. I think Interstellar for me has so many. It's so deep that you have so many good repeat viewings of this. And Batman Begins is right up there. Every time I watch this movie, I'm like, I'm blown away by how entertained I am, how everything's structured perfectly. If there's no fat on this, there's very little exposition. And you can tell because what little exposition there is sticks out like a sore thumb, i.e. sir, I've got to talk to you about this thing for 5 minutes. Why? Because we forgot to write it into this plot. Okay. but I think that Batman Begins is just, man, it's like a 95% to 99% movie for me. But
I put it number two on Nolan.
I put this number four below Prestige. I think Prestige is obviously sort of, it feels more original, right? I think it's more creative. I think it's more, everything I want out of a movie when it turns to, when it comes to sort of throwing off the viewer a lot, you know, misdirection, all that shit. I think I'm much more impressed by that overall script and movie making than I am here.
What was after Prestige on the list?
Memento. Right,
okay, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, I second Andy. I second Andy 100%. That's where I would put it, right above Memento. Those other movies, I really, really like this movie. But, like, God, those movies are all masterclasses in what they're doing.
See, I think you guys are underplaying the importance of how hard it is to make a really good Batman film after the five schlock that came. Well, excuse me. I apologize, Greg. The three schlock that came before this and the two classic Batman movies. I feel like him taking someone else's material and still elevating that to this is even, I think, more impressive than writing your own stuff as far as like, and again, I think that with the Prestige, I love that movie, but man, it just starts to fall apart at the end when they just start randomly introducing crazy sci-fi elements that are unsupported. Whereas this one, like, I think everything start to finish in this is just spot on.
They tell you from the beginning, there's going to be the magic repeating machines.
Yeah. I think this movie is unbelievable. I legitimately can't believe this exists. I can't believe that a Batman movie this good exists and is this grounded and that it is a Nolan movie. The fact that somehow the world, we live in a world in a timeline where Christopher Nolan got to make all the movies we just named and then made this is just unfucking believable. But I still think that there's some, the original aspects of Interstellar and Inception to me are just like on another level. So let's vote. Who thinks it's better than Insomnia following Dunkirk? Raise your hand. All of us, raise your hand. Who thinks it's better than Memento? Raise your hand. Everyone. Who thinks it's better than Prestige? Raise your hand. Me, Greg, and Nick. Who thinks it's better than Inception? Raise your hand. Only Nick and Greg. So that means...
We're the Bat Boys.
There we go.
Bat Boys for life.
The Nolan movies right now: Interstellar, number one; number two, Inception; number three, Batman Begins; number four, The Prestige; number five, Memento; number six, Dunkirk; and number seven, Following. Oh, you'll love to see it.
Could you do the Batman standings now, just for everybody, because we never read them beforehand?
Yep, Batman standings for everyone: Batman Begins, number one; Batman 89, number two; Batman Mask of the Phantasm, three; Batman Returns, four; Batman Forever, five; Batman and Robin, six; and Batman 66, seven, with a distant 12th, Catwoman.
What a shit basketball movie that was. You know what I mean? That was legitimately one of the worst movies.
I think we need to do a multiple video essays out of how we just didn't get Catwoman.
We need to do that.
I'll do it.
Please, Nick. Until Nick does that, we will return this Thursday for an review of The Conjuring Cinematic Universe. Cuckoo.
The Nun.
And then next week.
I will need some rankings for that series. I'm supposed to be on that series. I've been watching all the movies along with you, obviously, but I need to know what the rankings are so I can make the ranking image like we have.
That makes sense. That sounds right.
I will Slack you that, Andy. I will Slack you that. And then we got The Dark Knight next week. Let's fucking go. Until then, same bad time.
Same bad channel.